Good evening, and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, August 4th, 2011. I'm Lee Robertus. In the news tonight, Representative Shirley Ringo says in an interview with KRFP, she and Tom Trail were likely targeted by Republican redistricting plan. Eight moderate Republican senators who voted against Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna's education overhaul would face incumbents under the Republican plan. Federal Judge Malloy in Missoula says he was forced by precedent in yesterday's decision to rule against suit targeting Simpson Rider, removing wolves from the endangered species list in Idaho and Montana. And Montana Pipeline Safety Commission meets for the first time. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robertus, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The redistricting plan from the three Republican members of the Idaho Redistricting Commission submitted this week will put eight moderate Republican senators who voted against Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna's education overhaul this year in districts with incumbent senators. The eight Republicans include Senators Sean Keogh of Sandpoint and Joyce Broadsword of Sagal, who would face each other if they both run for re-election under the Republican redistricting plan. Another of the moderate Republicans is Senator Joe Stegner of Lewiston, who would have to run against freshman Democratic Senator Dan Schmidt of Moscow if the Republican plan is approved and they both decide to run. The other Republican senators are Tim Corder of Mountain Home, John Andreessen of Boise, Dean Cameron of Rupert, Denton Darrington of Declo, and Bart Davis of Idaho Falls. Under the plan, Andreessen would be in the same district as sitting Democratic Senator Les Bach, also of Boise. Andreessen told the Idaho Statesman's website today he isn't sure if he was targeted for his vote on education overhaul, but he fully suspects that's the case. Senator Tim Corder said, "The state that's the reddest of the red, and it's not red enough. You lock out independents, you run Republicans against Republicans. What is that but eating our own?" The Republican map was presented to the Idaho Commission on Reapportionment by Commissioner Lou Esposito on Tuesday. The commission has until Monday, September 4th, to come up with a legislative redistricting plan. Esposito told the Statesman he didn't look at who would run against who when he drew up the map. He said, "I know people are calling me a liar, but until the map was done, I couldn't tell you where most of the people were. Our job was to put together the very best possible map." Department of Education spokesperson Melissa McGrath told the Statesman Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna has not been involved in the redistricting process. However, Luna's deputy, Jason Hancock, is on the payroll of the three Republican members of the Redistricting Commission, working for $42 an hour to provide, quote, analysis, consultation, and other duties as requested by the commissioners in assisting them in developing mapping proposals to redraw congressional and legislative district boundaries. Hancock works for the same wage at the Education Department as Luna's top deputy, netting $68,000 a year, but he has 288 hours of unused vacation time, which presumably gives him time to help Republicans do the redistricting. During the fight over education overhaul in the legislature this year, critics called Hancock Luna's brain. Esposito told the Statesman he had only talked to Hancock once in the last week because Hancock was on vacation and only within cell phone range part of the time. He said he only spoke with Hancock about legislative boundaries in the Ada County area and not in the rest of the state. Boise State University political scientist Gary Moncrief said some districts with two incumbents are inevitable because of population shifts between censuses. The plan put forward by Democrats last week has five safe Democratic districts, while the Republican plan has three safe Democratic districts. Meanwhile, Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow says she suspects the Republican plan is targeting her District 6, which currently takes up all of Latah County. The Republican map not only splits Latah County, but it splits the cities of Moscow and Lewiston as well. The map puts most of Latah County in District 5, which includes all of Shoshone and Benoit counties, plus the southern and northeastern parts of Kootenai County. Under the plan, most of Moscow and the Genesee area would be in a new District 6 that would include a large part of Lewiston, except the Lewiston Orchards. Moscow would be in part of District 6 way in the north. Troy would be in District 5. In fact, the line between the legislative districts in the Republican plan is just east of the Moscow city limits. District 5 would also include Moscow north of Morton Street and Public Avenue. The district appears to realize a goal of Tea Party Republicans to sever the district, with a history of sending moderate Republicans and maverick Democrats to the state legislature. I asked Representative Shirley Ringo today in a telephone interview whether she thinks moderate Republicans and Democrats were targeted in the Republican redistricting plan in other parts of the state besides the Palouse area.
I haven't really studied the whole map to see whether that's the case, although given what's happening here in Latah County, I would guess that there's a motivation behind their suggestions that are not free of politics.
Now, some people are arguing that if Latah and Benoit County are together as a whole in a single district, that necessitates a district with rural Shoshone and Clearwater counties together. Counties that are not really well connected by roads and rather distant from each other in a single district. Do you think that's necessary?
Well, I think there are probably ways to accomplish it to minimize that. But obviously there has to be some give and take. It's really a matter of logic to try to get something that really works. But I think that when we come up with a plan, it has to be one that clearly serves the people the best and puts people together that have common interests and so on. So I think that there may have to be some give and take someplace to get a 35 district map that works. But the one that's proposed clearly has politics behind it and isn't looking for what's in the best interest of the people.
Now, there's this new law in Idaho requiring parts of districts being connected by state or U.S. highways during the redistricting process. And I'm wondering if you think that is like the new voter ID law, which is a way of further disenfranchising constituencies that tend to vote Democrat or more moderate.
I recall when that law was passed, and there was a lot of talk among members of the Republican majority that the bipartisan committee for redistricting wasn't a good idea, and that legislators themselves understood the process and what the needs are much better. And I think that the majority party, or at least some people, want to take that job back to the legislature. So I really did feel at the time that this connecting highway stipulation was something that would really throw something into the requirements that would make it harder for the committees to get something done. But on the other hand, one of the primary concerns has always been to keep counties, which are governing units of themselves, together. And I think that should be a primary consideration to get the most efficient representation in the legislature. So I did feel at the time that this highway thing was more motivated by politics and something that was put in by some people to make it more and more difficult for the bipartisan committee to be able to reach agreement.
From what I understand, there's a constitutional issue in that the Constitution requires that the Redistricting Commission try as much as possible not to split communities of interest, and that would include counties, cities, and Indian reservations and things such as that.
Yeah.
So, do you, in your opinion, do you think there's a constitutional issue over the new law that requires state highways to connect different parts of individual legislative districts?
Well, I think to the extent that that new law makes it more and more difficult to keep counties and communities of interest together, that there is a problem with the Constitution. And I think that the proposal that the Republicans have put forward would really have a hard time passing constitutional muster.
So you think the Redistricting Commission should look at constitutional issues first before following the new law passed by the legislature?
I would sure think so. In fact, I think that new law passed by the legislature would be challengeable. Anything that we pass that's inconsistent with the Constitution can be challenged and should be challenged. So I think that there's a real issue there to deal with. But looking at that proposal that the Republicans put forward, it really looks clear to me that it was targeting Representatives Trail and Ringo for their more moderate and progressive opinions, because it District 5 comes south until it gets far enough into Latah County to grab the two of us. We don't live that far apart from each other. And then I think to keep the precinct whole, they've taken all of the Precinct 4 and put it in Legislative District 5. So, you know, it really just does not make sense. And I can't personally see how I could be more effective representing a district that doesn't have Latah County and Moscow as part of it.
Let alone win an election.
Oh, yes, there is that.
Okay, so what kind of legal challenges in the past have sent redistricting plans to the state Supreme Court?
Well, last time, actually my memory only goes back 10 years on this. And I know that the proposal that was finally agreed upon, and by the way, they did get a majority of the commission 10 years ago to agree upon a proposal. And I do know that that proposal was challenged in court, but to be perfectly honest, I don't remember what the issues were, and I don't think the challenge prevailed, as I recall.
And I just want to ask you about Redistricting Commission member Esposito, who's one of the Republican commissioners. He noted testimony in the Moscow and Lewiston public hearings that the commission had from people wanting to split Latah County, but not testimony in favor of keeping them together. Your finding sentiment people want to keep the county together probably more prevalent, aren't you?
Oh, well, I am. I mean, certainly in Latah County, I understand the commissioners, county commissioners are in favor of keeping Latah County whole, and certainly those of us in the legislature are in favor of keeping Latah County whole. And then most of those people that I mentioned, in addition, are in favor of combining with Benoit County. And I would guess that there's been at least an equal amount of testimony in favor of combining Latah and Benoit, but I think, frankly, that it's a Republican issue to try to do it otherwise, where they see it trying to give advantage to the more conservative candidates and drawing the boundary lines so that will happen. But personally, I've talked to a number of people in Benoit County who would be very interested in being in a legislative district with Latah. So I think it's a complete misrepresentation to try to say that there's not any sentiment in terms of combining those two counties. And especially in Benoit. I know that there is some opposition that I've heard, but I've certainly talked to many people who have favored it as well.
Okay, that's all the questions I have, unless you have something you want to add.
I don't think so, Lee. It's just, the idea of the bipartisan committee was supposed to be to avoid gerrymandering, and I think that this just really reeks of that approach. When we were first hearing from the commission in the spring, I think that Commissioner, can't come up with the name, the one from Pocatello.
Moses? No, he's from Boise.
The Republican from Pocatello. Oh, Evan Frazier. Commissioner Evan Frazier was talking about, at that time, combining Moscow and Lewiston. And then later he said, he was just kind of fooling around and he wasn't really serious about that. But as it develops, that's exactly what they're putting forward. So I think that the Republicans on the commission have had this in mind for some time, and I think it's politically motivated.
Okay, well, the Republicans on the commission are supposed to put forward a modified map tomorrow afternoon, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will.
That was Democratic Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow commenting on the Republican Redistricting Commission plan that would split Latah County between Legislative Districts 5 and 6 and lump part of Moscow in with part of Lewiston and Genesee in a single District 6. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow. Pullman Fire Chief Pat Wilkins announced he is retiring after spending 40 years with the Pullman Fire Department. Wilkins has been fire chief since 1984, during which time he has seen a lot of changes within the department. Wilkins said, "I've seen Pullman grow, and it's going to continue to be larger. That's going to present a lot of challenges to the city due to restricted funding capabilities. I feel that the staff that we have is very competent, and they're doing a good job, but the city administration has a challenge to face." During his tenure as fire chief, Wilkins oversaw the merging of the Washington State University Fire Department with the Municipal Fire Department. Wilkins told the Daily News staffing at the city's two fire stations has become an issue because of tight budgets. He said, "Right now, we are really stretched to provide. It still takes money to bring staff in, and we are severely deficient." Federal Judge Donald Malloy in Missoula says he disagrees with his own ruling issued yesterday that the congressional rider that took wolves off the endangered species list is not unconstitutional. He said the move might have been politically expedient, but in his mind it violates the separation of powers doctrine by interfering with pending litigation without explicitly changing the law underlying the litigation. However, Malloy explained he is constrained by precedent from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Even though he doesn't agree with the precedent, Malloy said he must use it and rule against the groups that appealed the constitutionality of the rider. Republican Representative Mike Simpson of Idaho and Democratic Senator John Tester of Montana attached the rider to a federal spending bill earlier this year. It ordered the Secretary of Interior to reissue a 2009 wolf delisting rule that Malloy had earlier found in violation of the Endangered Species Act. Malloy said he personally agreed with the group's claim that Congress overreached by issuing the rider without explicitly amending the Endangered Species Act. The Ninth Circuit Court precedent to which Malloy referred said such language implicitly amends underlying law. Center for Biological Diversity Executive Director Kieran Suckling said she has never seen anything like this. Suckling said he is laying out a roadmap of how to appeal his own ruling and take it all the way to the Supreme Court. He does everything but buy us a bus ticket to Washington, D.C. One of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit is the Moscow-based group Friends of the Clearwater. FOC Director Gary McFarland told KRFP this afternoon that the three groups sued because Congress did not amend the underlying law, which is the Endangered Species Act.
The Congress did not amend the Endangered Species Act in any way. In fact, they claimed they didn't amend it. They just said wolves aren't are no longer listed as per a rule that was found illegal. That put it in a strange legal limbo. Therefore, we went to court and said, hey, there's a separation of powers doctrine in our Constitution. We think this is unconstitutional.
And you went to court just a couple of weeks ago on this particular issue.
It wasn't that long ago. That's right. We went to court a little bit ago with the Alliance for the Wild Rockies, Wild Earth Guardians, and on a separate case, Western Watersheds Project and the Center for Biological Diversity also were in court filing their own motion. They were parallel and similar lawsuits.
So what did Judge Malloy say?
Judge Malloy basically scolded Congress for not really acting in the public interest and not being clear and doing something in a spending bill. He also, in a sense, scolded the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, where he believed that circuit court has misread the Constitution and the separation of powers in several issues, misread what the Supreme Court has said, but he felt bound by that ruling made by the Ninth Circuit Court. So he basically said, I agree with plaintiffs, but I am bound, so I cannot rule for you.
Did he rule against you?
Yes, he ruled against us because he felt bound by a precedent he feels is a wrong application of the law. But since that precedent was ruled upon by the Ninth Circuit and he is just a district judge, he felt bound or compelled to rule against us. But he opened the avenue for an appeal to the Ninth Circuit and possibly eventually to the Supreme Court.
And what does the change to the endangered species status of wolves in legislation attached to an appropriations bill, but not supposedly part of the Endangered Species Act, not a change to the Endangered Species Act. What does that mean for the Endangered Species Act? Apparently, that's what you're trying to get at.
That's exactly what we're trying to get at, in part. We don't know. It's unclear. In fact, the judge remarked on that in his ruling, how unclear it was. What does it mean for the Endangered Species Act? We really don't know. It's hard to say that the act was amended because Congress, in statements to the press, said it wasn't. So it's really hard to know exactly what that means. It's a sort of a strange limbo, and the judge was looking for some clarity and integrity in the political process.
Okay, and if you do get a ruling in your favor on appeal, would that stop the wolf hunts?
It would stop the wolf hunts, and the wolves would be relisted under the Endangered Species Act. I don't know how likely the Ninth Circuit is to overturn their own rulings, but we'll have to wait and see. I think there's a very good chance. I think the plaintiffs, at least the three plaintiffs on the Wan lawsuit, do want to challenge this. I suspect the other two do as well. So I think there's a very, very good chance that we'll be appealing to the Ninth Circuit, because that is a circuit court here that governs issues here in Idaho. And from there, we'll see what happens.
That was Gary McFarland with Friends of the Clearwater, one of the plaintiffs in the recently filed lawsuit against the rider attached to a spending bill by U.S. Representative Mike Simpson of Idaho and Democratic U.S. Senator John Tester of Montana that takes wolves off the endangered species list in Idaho and Montana. The groups who filed the suit have not decided if they will appeal. Idaho's wolf hunting season begins September 1st with an unlimited quota, although there will be quotas in a few of the state's hunting zones. Montana's wolf season is expected to begin October 22nd with a 200 wolf quota. The Idaho Department of Transportation has announced another of the smaller ExxonMobil tar sands shipments will be heading up U.S. 95 through Moscow on Saturday night. These smaller loads are precursors to the giant split megaloads ExxonMobil subsidiary Imperial Oil wants to send to the Alberta tar sands. The larger split megaloads are up to 430,000 pounds each and take up two lanes of the highway. They are waiting at the Port of Lewiston. Saturday night's load, also originating at the Port of Lewiston, will be only 60,000 pounds, 17.6 feet wide, and 71 feet long. The typical lane on U.S. Highway 95 is 12 feet wide. Helen Yost of the Moscow group Wild Idaho Rising Tide said protesters can assemble at the Pie Hole restaurant on the corner of 2nd and Washington Streets at 10:30 p.m. Idaho Transportation Department says the tar sand shipment will leave the port of Lewiston at approximately 10 p.m. Yost said those who want to monitor the shipment can meet at the Pie Hole at 9 p.m. on Saturday night. The newly formed Montana Oil Pipeline Safety Council met for the first time on Tuesday and agreed to map the spiderweb of pipelines carrying oil in the state. Governor Brian Schweitzer said the state does not have an inventory of pipelines, their sizes, locations, and a list of regulations which apply to them. Schweitzer said, "How is it that pipelines crossing rivers in Montana don't have easements? How does that happen?" The council is comprised of the heads of the state departments of transportation, environmental quality, and natural resources and conservation. Its mission is to establish an overall safety picture for the pipelines and make recommendations for regulatory oversight to prevent future pipeline ruptures. The July 1st break in ExxonMobil's Silvertip pipeline at Laurel spilled an estimated 1,200 barrels of crude oil into the scenic Yellowstone River. Cleanup crews, which have been hampered by high water, estimate in an area 30 miles downstream from the break, 60% of the shoreline has been contaminated with oil. Pipeline Safety Council Chair Richard Opper, who heads the Montana Department of Environmental Quality, called the pipeline network a spiderweb that has evolved over 60 years. Federal Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration Regional Director Christopher Hoydahl said most of the information the council is seeking is publicly available, though it is not all assembled in one place. Yesterday, ExxonMobil applied for a construction permit to replace the broken Silvertip line. The new line will be at least 40 feet deep, and ExxonMobil must apply for an easement. The pipeline that broke was buried 5 feet deep, and regulators believe the break was caused when flooding eroded the riverbed under the pipeline. The State Department of Natural Resources will take public comment on the permit until Wednesday, August 17th. Latah County Commissioners yesterday completed a $15.2 million budget plan for the 2012 fiscal year, which starts October 1st. County departments requested $15.7 million, but Commission Chair Jennifer Barrett said the commission worked hard to identify unnecessary expenses. In cutting a $500,000 from the budgets requested by county departments, commissioners say they have met their goal of not dipping into the county's $1 million reserve fund. Along with approval to purchase more gas-efficient vehicles, the commission cut the sheriff's department's fuel budget and dropped the mileage reimbursement. A rainy day fund for community disasters was trimmed from $5,000 to $3,000. Commissioners plan to review the budget a final time next Monday. A public hearing on the budget will be held at the courthouse Wednesday, August 31st at 4 p.m. The commissioners also drafted a letter similar to the resolution passed by the Moscow City Council Monday, which declares support for a redistricting plan that leaves Latah County intact in a single legislative district, referring to the Republican proposed redistricting map that splits Latah County and puts most of Moscow and part of Lewiston in the same district. Commissioner Tom Stroshein said, "I absolutely can't support that one." Some Post Falls residents are gearing up to oppose a proposal by Coeur d'Alene Paving to rezone 116 acres near State Line Speedway from agriculture to mining in anticipation of relocating its asphalt batch plant currently operating near Rathdrum. There are presently three other asphalt batch plants within a mile of the proposed rezone. Haley Lake, whose family horse business is located less than a mile from the acreage owned by Coeur d'Alene Paving, is concerned about exposure to fumes and noise. Coeur d'Alene Paving co-owner Todd Kaufman said the current Rathdrum site has more houses close to it than the proposed one near Post Falls, and the area around the proposed rezone is not residential. It is zoned for agriculture, light industry, and mining. Kootenai County Commissioners will hold a hearing on the zoning proposal today. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather. There's a 20% chance of isolated showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m. tonight. Otherwise, partly cloudy, low 56. Mostly sunny tomorrow, high 84. A 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms before midnight Friday night. Partly cloudy otherwise, low 53. West winds, 5 to 15. And clear to mostly clear conditions all the way through Wednesday of next week. And actually Thursday, as long as the forecast goes for, and highs each day of 84, lows around 50. Currently fair skies, 88 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Remember, if you want to help keep newscasts like this on the radio, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of public events and public affairs you hear throughout the day, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $25 for students. You can send your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or find out how to donate on our website. I'm Lee Robartist. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. We'll return at 5:30 again tomorrow night. Coming up next, we'll have the weekly column from Amy Goodman. There's no new edition of Talk Nation Radio this week. And at 6:30, we'll have Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And music begins at 7:30. With the Green Gypsy, music and entertainment throughout the night, right here on KRFP Moscow, listener-supported free speech community radio, 92.5 on your dial. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow.